Good morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about the High Plains Book Awards, a flavor moment with Stella Fong, and a rally in Hardin calling for action on missing and murdered Indigenous people. It's Friday, February 28th. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. As the deadline to submit taxes quickly approaches, Montanans have many free resources to help with filing, Ora Wetzel reports.
Organizations and students in Billings and Bozeman are offering free tax assistance through the April 15th deadline. Montana State University Billings students are teaming up with Volunteer Income Tax Assistance, or VITA, to offer free tax assistance for individuals and families making less than $56,000 a year. VITA, with the Human Development Resource Council, is also providing tax assistance through mid-April for households in Bozeman with incomes under $56,000. Another option for Montanans is AARP. It is not required to be a member of AARP to use these services. Students with Montana State University's Jake Jabs College of Business and Entrepreneurship are offering free tax help for households with an income under $54,000. Appointments are required for some of these services. More information is on our website, ypradio.org. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Ora Wetzel.
Voters in Columbia Falls, Montana, will see a resort tax proposal on their primary ballots in June targeting tourist-related items, alcohol, restaurant meals, and other non-essential goods. Hungry Horse News reported Wednesday that the 3% tax would go into effect October 1st and be effective for 20 years if approved. City officials say the measure would only appear on the ballots of residents from Columbia Falls and is seen as a way to capture tourist and visitor revenue without taxing property owners. Officials say the tax is expected to raise about $450,000 initially. City Council voted unanimously last week to put the tax on the ballot. Montana will receive more than $3 million from the federal government to improve state elections. Montana Public Radio's Corn Cates Carney reports much of the money will be given to local governments as part of the federal Help America Vote Act.
State Elections Director Dana Corson says the agency will kick in an additional $625,000 in matching funds for election grants. The Secretary of State's office announced this week all 56 counties will receive a portion of the funds to update or buy new election equipment. More populated counties are receiving north of $100,000, and smaller counties will receive in the tens of thousands. The Secretary of State is giving counties until July 1st to outline a local plan for how they'd spend the money. In Montana's request for the 2020 funds, Deputy Secretary of State Christy Jacobson said the state would spend with an emphasis on election security. A portion of the state grant is outlined for a security review of county elections with help from the National Guard. It's unclear if the money will come into the state in time to have an impact on 2020 elections. I'm Corin Cates Carney, Montana Public Radio News.
Nominations are underway for the 14th annual High Plains Book Awards. These awards recognize the best fiction, photography, Indigenous writers, and other literary works coming out of Montana, Wyoming, and six other regional states, as well as three Canadian provinces. Kay Erickson explains before a nominee can win, he or she needs to win the heart and mind of a key book demographic, community readers who screen each of the hundreds of nominations.
Now, shortly after the nominations close on March 13th, the integral work of the community readers begins. It's Mary Euchre's job as lead reader wrangler to find them and put them to work.
They are given a selected bag of books that were randomly picked and put into those bags. And at the end of the reading period, which is usually typically May 15, those books are returned to the library with an evaluation that's been filled out for each book.
The number of readers Euchre needs is determined by the number of nominations.
So for example, if poetry had 21 books submitted, I would need 21 readers, and each one of those readers would probably read anywhere from 3 to 5 books.
With 12 categories of books, That's a lot of community readers. When their work is done, their evaluations are tabulated, and the top three books in each category become finalists. The finalist books go to a panel of judges, says Becky Weehy, a High Plains Book Awards board member.
And those judges are people who have been authors in the book awards prior. And so they then read the three finalist books, and there's several judges that read the finalist books and then pick the winner.
The top names of the finalists in each category will be released in June. The winners are announced at the awards banquet held in September in Billings. The High Plains Book Awards were established in 2006 to recognize regional authors and/or literary works that examine and reflect life in Montana, Wyoming, North and South Dakota, Colorado, Nebraska, Kansas, and the three Canadian provinces of Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba. For more information on the High Plains Book Awards and how to sign up as a community reader, go to our website, ypradio.org. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Kay Erickson.
There are currently no reported cases of the new coronavirus in Montana. This, however, may only be temporary. State public health officials say they're preparing for the worst. Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien reports.
The COVID-19 virus continues its steady march. One by one, more countries are reporting new cases. At the time of this recording, California Governor Gavin Newsom says at least 33 people have tested positive for COVID-19, and that state is now monitoring over 8,000 others. Quite a contrast to Montana, where state health officials say a total of 24 people returning from mainland China have been monitored for coronavirus exposure. 9 are still being monitored. The rest are cleared and healthy. So far, so good. That, however, could change on a dime.
A single case of something like this right now, based on what we know, would be very disruptive and would be hard to deal with.
Jim Murphy, who leads the Montana Health Department's Communicable Disease Bureau, says even one COVID-19 diagnosis would require an extraordinary amount of resources.
To isolate a person for a fairly long time until their illness resolves and they clear the virus. And then the investigation that would go along with that, identifying who was at risk, and monitoring those people under quarantine, and that would be a strict quarantine, would require a lot of resources that even the largest health jurisdiction in Montana.
Yes, absolutely.
Ellen Leahy is director of the Missoula City County Health Department. Last spring, an outbreak of whooping cough had Leahy's staff scrambling to keep pace. The department hired extra public health nurses to help chase down leads. Leahy says the response to a hypothetical coronavirus epidemic would dwarf that effort.
Because it's a novel virus, a new virus, theoretically and probably in reality, the majority of people are susceptible. With pertussis, at least you had folks who had some immunity. But with a new virus, you have to theoretically consider that your whole population could get it.
Montana's public health officials are gathering around tables and connecting via teleconference to war game COVID-19 strategies. COVID-19 is caused by a member of the coronavirus family that's a close cousin to the SARS and MERS virus that have caused outbreaks in the past. Leahy says they're closely monitoring the current outbreak to glean any information about its spread and incubation period. Her Missoula team is already preparing a basic incident command structure.
So we have an incident commander, we have infectious disease specialists, we have a public information officer, and we have someone assigned to just researching the literature and keeping us all apprised.
And that kind of pre-planning is critical, according to Montana Communicable Disease Bureau Chief Jim Murphy.
A single case in Montana would have a lot of attention from our federal partners at the Center for Disease Control, the state health department, it would be heavily involved. But at the end of the day, the local jurisdiction would have an awful lot of the responsibility. They would be the lead on the investigation that would identify other people that may be at risk. They would be the lead on implementing quarantines, for instance.
Murphy says Montana's local health agencies, overseen by health boards, have broad authority to issue mandatory patient isolation and quarantine orders.
Our law does allow us to use law enforcement options if we have to, if we think that somebody's going to be non-compliant or if the risks are too high. we can get a little bit more strict with those orders.
But Murphy says he believes most sick Montanans would never endanger anyone else and would voluntarily comply with isolation or quarantine orders. So how could COVID-19 affect school schedules? That, says Missoula health official Ellen Leahy, would be a tough call and one made on a case-by-case basis.
When you close schools, you're trying to balance between how likely is it that people have been exposed at school and they're going to get it versus how likely if you take the children that perhaps were not infected or exposed and you send them home or to daycare or somebody else's house, have you really, really cut down contact? That's a hard question to answer.
And for the time being, Montana health officials say they don't have all the answers. The COVID-19 virus is not in Montana yet, and they want to keep it that way. While there's no vaccination or cure, experts say knowledge truly is power. Public health officials urge Montanans to lean on credible sources of information during this public health emergency, to resist the urge to fall for baseless rumors, conspiracy theories, and get-rich-quick scams. Rich Rasmussen is president and CEO of the Montana Hospital Association.
Don't just pick up an ad that you might see in a social media feed, but actually do some research. Look at what the Department of Public Health has put out on their Corona site. Look at what the Centers for Disease Control has put out on their site. Those are the most credible sources, and that's who we should be looking to and listening to as we try to protect ourselves and our families.
Federal health officials say the immediate health risk of COVID-19 is low. Edward O'Brien, Montana Public Radio.
Two Montana chefs have been nominated as regional semifinalists for the James Beard Foundation Best Chef Award. The nod is a second for Dave Wells of Chico Hot Springs in Prey and a first for Nick Steen of Walker's Grill in downtown Billings. Stella Fong with YPR's Flavors Under the Big Sky caught up with Steen to chat food, roots, and putting Billings food scene on the map nationally.
In this Flavor Moments, we find out who in Montana hold the honor of semifinalists for the James Beard Foundation Best Chef in the Mountain Region. Chef Dave Wells of Chico Hot Springs in Prey and Nick Steen of Walker's Grill in downtown Billings made this year's list. This is Chef Wells' second nomination. Back in January, we talked to him in Flavors Under the Big Sky, along with past honorees Michael Muirhead of Moss Taco and Red Lodge, and from Billings, Jeremy Ingelbretson of Lilac, and James Honecker of Bistro Enzo. So for Chef Nick Steen, how is he reacting to the news of being a semifinalist?
Excited, honored, and overall just so proud of everybody that I've worked with and the staff that's here.
Steen stepped into the executive chef position after working at Lone Mountain Ranch in Big Sky and the Northern Hotel in Billings. He joined the team at Walker's Grill at an important chapter in time.
We did a remodel about two and a half years ago. The biggest thing we wanted to do was really become the modern restaurant of Montana and really showcase what's so amazing here, the bounty that Montana has in front of us all the time. And so we've changed things. We're constantly looking at what's the next new thing. How are we going to manipulate this ingredient to really showcase it, to make it the best thing? And then, you know, moving forward, we're, you know, obviously we have a big task in front of us to continue to be successful, to continue to push the envelope. And this is just one more ticket to amp it up and keep us going. I think it's the most exciting thing that's really ever happened for Walker's in quite a long time.
Chef Steen, a Montana native, knows the Big Sky palate.
Well, what's fun is having been in Montana my whole life and born and raised here and had the opportunity to cook with some amazing chefs from around the world, what I've learned is that the palates around the world are the same. Everybody wants something that tastes good. Everybody wants something that they feel they're getting their value for. We don't feel like it has to be over the top. It doesn't have to be anything extremely fancy. It just has to taste good, be cooked right, whether it's in food or cocktails or wine. We just want quality. Sometimes we get overlooked because we have a million people within the entire state. You know, I joke always we're outnumbered by cattle 4-1. And we're constantly trying to compete with places like the Denvers and the Portlands and Seattle.
So what makes the food at Walker's Grill so special?
We feature all of our beef here at Walker's is actually from the Kraft Ranch outside of Laurel. So we do all local beef. We're buying pork from right outside of Whitehall, Montana. Our chickens can be Hooterite chickens from time to time. We get local eggs and then vegetables. We were actually started working with a local farm, Clark Kent Farms, and they're actually growing vegetables just for Walker's. So we have a direct-to-farm relationship where they're growing us vegetables and nobody else can really touch that, which is really fun for us. And then as they grow and they get bigger, they'll put it out there. But nobody understands how amazing the state is quite like like Montanans do.
This Montanian understands the great bounty we have in the Treasure State. Many congratulations to Chef Nick Steen and Dave Wells for being recognized as this year's semifinalists for the James Beard Foundation Best Chef in the Mountain Region. This is Flavor Moments, and I'm Stella Fong.
Stella Fong also spoke with Best Chef Regional nominee Dave Wells of Chico Hot Springs, along with former finalists from Montana. Hear that episode of Flavors Under the Big Sky on our website, ypradio.org. Families in southeast Montana are demanding law enforcement review all cases of missing and murdered Indigenous people in Bighorn, Rosebud, and Yellowstone counties to uncover possible revelations about events leading up to known deaths and improve future investigations. Kayla DeRoche attended a rally in Hardin Monday where families called for action.
La Fonda Big Leggings.
Rally organizers with Native American rights nonprofit Sovereign Bodies Institute read the names of the missing and murdered in front of the Bighorn County Courthouse, where a group of about 50 gathered this week. Person after person takes the microphone and says they feel ignored and unheard. That includes Geraldyn Bulltail. The body of her daughter, 18-year-old Kaysera Stops Pretty Places, was found in a Hardin backyard last year. The cause of death is still unknown.
This Bighorn County, they didn't call back, they didn't respond, they didn't do nothing.
The Sovereign Bodies Institute this week helped families address a letter to county officials, legislators, and state and federal agencies detailing changes they say would be steps towards bringing justice to victims and their families. Executive Director Anita Luke Casey says they're asking for an interagency review of all missing persons cases, homicides, suspicious deaths, and cases where cause of death was classified as undetermined, exposure, or otherwise natural causes.
We've seen over and over and over again that county sheriff and the coroners, they are negligent and they're refusing to act on these cases, and they need to be held accountable for it. And the best people to do that are state and federal law enforcement.
Sovereign Bodies Institute writes that the majority of the families who signed the letter are still waiting on resolutions to their loved ones' cases. In a lower level of the courthouse building, Sheriff Lawrence Bighair says it can be taxing to hear so much criticism, especially, he says, when his staff is pulling long hours working on open cases and meanwhile waiting on subpoenas from the county attorney's office.
They want to point fingers at the sheriff's office for not doing a proper investigation or whatever, but it seems like that because we don't have the cooperation from that other office. It'll help us, you know, but why don't they get on that office for not helping us with the subpoenas that we're asking for.
Bighorn County Attorney Jay Harris emailed a statement to YPR saying that a subpoena from January was held back because the sheriff's office didn't provide material needed for the court to issue an investigative subpoena. Sovereign Bodies Institute has criticized jurisdictional barriers in the past. This week, Luke Casey also took issue with a state law that allows county coroners, an elected position that requires a GED and a basic coroner course, to decide if a postmortem examination by the state medical examiner is needed as part of an investigation.
It really shouldn't be that way. The person that decides if a person gets a death investigation and what their cause and manner of death should be somebody with medical training.
The letter from Sovereign Bodies Institute requests an interagency review of cases where the death is, in their words, wrongfully classified as natural causes like exposure or hypothermia. Terry Bullis of Bullis Mortuary in Hardin is the Bighorn County coroner. He says his role is to determine when, where, and how a person dies and whether death resulted from criminal means.
If I'm not able to make the judgments based upon information, I usually refer to the state medical examiner for assistance.
In 2017, Bighorn County sent bodies for autopsies in almost 16% of deaths, according to state data. That's one of the highest rates for counties across the state. Families of a recent rash of young girls declared dead of exposure say they've observed bruising and other markings on the girls' bodies that they've seen as signs of violence. State medical examiner Robert Kurtzman is one of four forensic pathologists who can make cause of death determinations in the state. He says the body goes through changes the families could interpret as evidence of foul play. He says the coroner is often tasked with communicating that process to families, a possible weak point that can make a situation much worse.
If the coroner is working with the family, the coroners, you know, may or may not have the same type of expertise with regard to explaining sometimes complex medical questions. And so it becomes a matter of the limitations of the system.
Kurtzman says failure to communicate in a transparent and clear way can build distrust over time. Many ralliers Monday expressed profound distrust of local authorities. Grace Boltail, the aunt of the late Kay Sarah Stops Pretty Places, called for ralliers to take action.
You want change in here in Bighorn County? Everyone that's a registered voter, get into that booth and start making it.
Kayla DeRoche, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
Justice! Bonnie Three Irons! Justice!
And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds Monday morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.